Welcome to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly. This podcast is presented in the context of our Sunday morning service. We hope you enjoy this presentation.
1 Peter chapter 4. By the way, a few weeks ago we had Easter. Almost doesn't seem like it could be Easter with all the snow that we have on the ground. But we celebrated Easter, and I just wanted to make note of something. When we started our Easter service off, and all throughout, we had videos of actors sharing different circumstances, and those were actors. The people that were portraying real-life situations, they really didn't have a problem with alcohol or pornography or that, and we just wanted you to know that, because there were some people that thought, yeah, they were divorced, or they had those things in their life, and just to let you know, they were actors, okay? All right, just wanted to clear that up. I want to start off by asking a question this morning. Let's imagine that we knew that Jesus was coming back in the next few months. That within the next year, Jesus would come back, the end was here, okay? If we knew that for certain, what should our priorities be? What should be the things that we really focus on, okay? I want help me here. Give me some responses. If we knew Jesus was coming in the next 2, 3, 4 months, what should be our main priorities be as believers?
Sinners.
Going out and getting the sinners, okay? Repenting. Prayer. Anyone else? Any other priorities? Getting our house in order, okay? Now, we're going to come back to this in just a moment, all right? But today, we are going to focus on what Peter talks about in chapter 4, verse 7 of the book of 1 Peter. And the title of this morning's message is Beyond the Pineapple, okay? Beyond the Pineapple, a biblical look at hospitality. Now, some of you are going, what in the world is this about, Beyond the Pineapple? How many of you knew that the pineapple is the international symbol of hospitality? Some of you do that. Okay, great, great. So I'm not nuts, all right? There are other people that can attest to that. But the pineapple is the international symbol of hospitality. You say, how in the world did it come to be that? Well, it was originally found only in Central and South America. But in 1493, Christopher Columbus discovered the pineapple on a Caribbean island called Guadalupe. And you can see up on the map, up on the screen, Guadalupe is to the right there. It's circled in yellow. It's kind of south and east of Puerto Rico. That's where Guadalupe is. And Columbus, on his second voyage to the Americas, he discovered the pineapple, and he brought this exotic fruit with him back to Spain. It gained the name pineapple because it looked like a giant pine cone, but it was sweet and juicy like an apple. So the pineapple was the name. And this became a rage in Europe, but it was very difficult to raise. Spaniards realized they were welcome on the Caribbean islands in a village if there was a pineapple set outside the village. And so it became a symbol that was taken back to Europe. Now, how many know where pineapples grow? Where do they grow? Nice, warm, tropical climates. Not in Wyoming, okay? Not in Wyoming. It did not fare too well in Europe. It was 150 years before they could get pineapples to grow in Holland and England, and they used greenhouse techniques so they could grow them. And so as the popularity of the pineapple spread, but there was a lack of a local supply, it was very, very expensive to purchase them. Only the wealthy could afford pineapples. And you just imagine, you go to someone's house, for you to be given a pineapple as a dessert, as a treat, it was a symbol of honor, of warmth, of welcome, of hospitality, of value. And that's where the pineapple began to really gain that symbolism. Now, it was a very rare thing until they began to grow them. And because it was associated with wealth, they began to put pineapples in architecture. both in Europe and America in the 18th century. You can sometimes look outside of homes and you can see them like on door knockers. You can see them on like stone statues. They were put on the top of doorposts inside houses or outside houses at entryways. They were on walkways and gardens. They were on mantles and staircases. Innkeepers began to put them on signs, and to have a pineapple on your inn meant that it's a place of welcome and hospitality and a place that is really a really nice place. They begin to carve them on bedposts. They put them on china, on napkins. The pineapple just began to grow because it was this symbol of hospitality. If you go to the East Coast and the South, I understand that there is a lot of decor. You can look on the in different mansions, government buildings, even churches, and you'll see pineapple both on the exterior and interior facades of the architecture. Here's the thing about the pineapple, though. It can just become a symbol that you put on a sign to say welcome, but you still don't have the very good customer service at a hotel or in a place. And as believers, we need to make sure that our hospitality is not just a symbol. Whether it's a pineapple or coffee and cookies at a treat table after church, which I thank God for our treat team and our greeters, but friends, hospitality needs to become a vital value in the church. It needs to be the culture of a church. It needs to be a persona that each and every one of us carry with us everywhere we go. You say, Craig, where do you get that? Let's look in our text, 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 7. Peter says, the end of all things is at hand. In other words, hey, it's wrapping up soon. Jesus is coming quickly. Therefore, be serious and watchful in your prayers. And above all things, have fervent love for one another. For love will cover a multitude of sins. Be hospitable to one another without grumbling. As each one has received the gift, minister it to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. I find it interesting, as Peter's talking about the end times, the things that he lists there. Verse 7, he says, be serious and watchful in prayer. Okay, that's a no-brainer, huh? We need to be praying. That's right. Verse 8, be fervent in love. That makes sense. We need to have love. Verse 10, use your gift in ministry. How many are using your gifts in ministry? Oh boy, okay, let me ask that again. I think some of you are sleeping, because I know we have more. How many of you use your gifts in ministry? That's great. We're having a ministry team appreciation. Everyone who's been involved in ministry in the past year, we're having a special red carpet reception, a Casper Faith Superstar Appreciation on Sunday night, May 19th. We counted up 146 people that are involved in ministry in our church. And we're running about 220 on an average on a Sunday morning. Friends, that's about two-thirds of the congregation being involved in ministry on a regular basis. Give yourselves a hand. That's fantastic. Thank you for using your gifts in ministry. The thing that I find interesting about Peter is, besides prayer, besides love, besides ministry, at verse 9 he says, be hospitable to one another without grumbling. How many of you would have thought that? Hospitality. Hospitality needs to be part of the fabric of every believer during the end times. So let's take a look this morning at biblical hospitality so that we can understand what is this value, what is this quality that Jesus wants us to have during the end times. First of all, if you're taking notes this morning, hospitality is a mandate for Christians. Hospitality is a mandate for Christians. It is a command. It's not an option. It's something that all of us need to engage in. In verse 9 of our text, it says, be hospitable to one another. He doesn't say, if you want to. He says, be. It's not an option. And we're to do it without grumbling, without complaining. There are some of you today, Pastor, do I have to be hospitable? Yes. Notice he doesn't say, sanguines, be hospitable. He doesn't say, extroverts, be hospitable. He says it to everyone. Whether you're calm and reserved and shy, you're the wallflower that likes to stand over in the corner during a party, or you like to be right in the thick of things, the life of the party, it doesn't matter. All of us are to be hospitable. So what is hospitality? The word hospitality is a Greek word. It's philoxenos. Isn't that a great word? It's made up of two separate Greek words, phileo, meaning love, and xenos, meaning strangers. It means a love of strangers, a love for people that you are unacquainted with, a love for people that are different from you, a love for those that you do not know. That's what it means, and so we are to have this love for people that maybe we're unfamiliar with, we're unacquainted with, they're different, they're outsiders, they're not part of our normal group. That's what hospitality is. Peter is saying, as a church, we need to get outside of our comfort zones. It's so easy for us just to, after church, talk to the people that are our little circle of friends. Anthony, Tiffany, Luke. And I talk to Anthony, Tiffany, and Luke every Sunday because they're my friends. They're who I'm comfortable hanging out with. Anthony, Tiffany, and Luke. I come Sunday morning. Anthony, Tiffany, and Luke. I come to discipleship group. Anthony, Tiffany, and Luke. And all I do is talk to Anthony, Tiffany, and Luke. Hospitality means I get outside of us four and no more. And that I engage every person I see with value and honor, warmth and welcoming, care and kindness. It is so easy for us to get self-absorbed in what we're comfortable in. And Jesus wants us to get out of our comfort zone. Go beyond the circle of friends that we normally hang out with. That's what it means to be hospitality. It means, get this, that every single one of us are a greeter in the church. Okay? Yes, we have a greeter ministry that stands by the front door, but they are not the only greeters. Every single one of us, look around this room. Turn to your neighbor and say, you're a greeter. Sanguines, cholerics, phlegmatics, it doesn't matter. All of us are greeters. All of us are to engage and initiate relationship with others. It's pretty quiet in here today. There are four basic groups of people in a typical church service on a Sunday morning, okay? The first group are the good old boys. The good old boys. I have my friends, Anthony, Tiffany, Luke. It's the good old boys. They're my circle of friends, and I know them. And yeah, Anthony, Tiffany, Luke, that's my friends. Uh-huh. That's where I hang out, the good old boys. I talk to them. There's a second group, the outsiders. The outsiders are the ones that you see standing around after service with a cup of coffee and a cookie out in the lobby, and they're hoping that someone will talk to them and interact with them. They're the person that slips in to church. And they sit down, they go through worship, and no one talks to them, no one greets them. They walk out, and no one has exchanged anything with them. No one's acknowledged them. And they so desperately want to be part of the group, but they don't feel a part. They feel they don't belong. There's a third group. I call them the racers. You know what they are? This is the racer. They sit in service. And we get done singing our final song, and we say, Lord bless you, have a great day. Boom, they're out. They're racing for the door. They're going as fast as they can. Man, can I beat them before they get to the cookies? And they are gone. That's the racer. I think I hurt my knee. Oh, man, no. They race out. What's funny is I know some people that are racers, and they say, that church is so unfriendly, no one ever talks to me. It's like, they have to run the 100 meters to catch you. The last note has been sung, and you're already in the car with the engine rev. Here's the thing. Some racers at one time were outsiders. And they got tired of trying. And they're tired of feeling rejected every single Sunday because nobody noticed them. And they're still going to be faithful and come to church and worship God. But there's too much pain to stick around and hope again another Sunday that maybe, just maybe, somebody will say, "Hi, I'm Craig. What's your name?" And so they race out as quick as they can because they don't want to deal with that anymore. The last group that we find in the church are what I call the includers. The includers have close friends in the church, but they just don't focus on Anthony, Tiffany, and Luke. They include others in their friends. In fact, they say, "Hi, I am Craig. What's your name?"
Neil.
Neil, good to meet you. Neil, let me introduce you to my friends, Anthony, Tiffany, and Luke. We're going out for lunch today at Wendy's. Would you like to join us? See, that's what the includers do. He's not sure about that. But that's what the includers do. The includers look for people that are new, or maybe people they don't know, they're unfamiliar with, and they help them to engage in relationship. They're the ones that maybe make a little bit extra Sunday dinner if they cook Sunday dinner at home, and they look for someone, say, "Hey, we're having roast beef. Would you like to come to our house? You don't have to bring anything." Or they include them to go to Wendy's after church. Or maybe they say, "Hey, you know what? I like Rockies baseball. We're going to have a cookout and watch the game today. If you like to come, bring a pack of hot dogs and a bag of chips. Meet at our house. We're just going to have a cookout and watch the game." They look for ways to include people in their lives. And friends, Jesus wants all of us to be includers because the includers are the biblical definition of hospitality. The racers don't have it. The outsiders don't have it. The good old boys don't have it. But the includers do. Friends, which group do you see yourself in this morning? I'm not going to ask a show of hands, but are you part of the good old boys, or there's only a certain group of people that you talk to when you come to church? Are you an outsider, one of those that just no one ever comes to you? And I want to say something. If you're an outsider, Proverbs says, "He who wants to have friends must find themselves friendly." And one of the biggest things I need to do, and here's, I know it can hurt. I know if you've been rejected a lot, it might be difficult. But sometimes when we look cold or we're afraid, people think we don't want to be interacted with. Maybe we really do. But all of us need to go to that fourth level, the includer level. Hopefully you're not a racer here, but there are racers, because I know when I walk to the back door, there's some people I don't beat to the back door to shake their hand. Biblical hospitality means I include others. I have a love for those that are outside of my comfort zone. It's everyone's responsibility. Peter talked about it. Paul talked about it. Romans chapter 12, verse 13. He wrote to the Christians of Rome, he said that you should be given to hospitality. And that word "given" means to pursue or to run after. Paul said you guys need to be running after hospitality. Running after the racer as they're going out the door. You need to pursue it. The writer of Hebrews said, "Let brotherly love continue. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some have unwittingly entertained angels." Here's the thing. Why is hospitality so big? Because God has created us for relationship. God has created us for relationship. You know how important relationship is? Take a look at the screen. There are several scriptures. Romans chapter 15, verse 7, it says, "Receive one another." 1 Corinthians 12, 25, "Have the same care for one another." Galatians 5, 13, "Serve one another." Galatians 6, 2, "Bear one another's burdens." Ephesians 4, 32, "Be kind to one another." Colossians 3:13, forgiving one another. Verse 16, teaching and admonishing one another. 1 Thessalonians 5:11, comfort each other and edify one another. Hebrews 3:13, exhort one another daily. Hebrews 10:24, let us consider one another. Verse 25, be exhorting one another. James 4:11, do not speak evil of one another. James 5:9, do not grumble against one another. 1 Peter 3:8, have compassion for one another. 1 Peter 4:9, be hospitable to one another. Verse 10, minister your spiritual gift to one another. And 1 John 3:11, love one another. We need one another. God created us for relationship. One of the main reasons is found in Proverbs 27:17. It says, as iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. When we are engaged in relationships with other people, it makes us better. It sharpens us. It hones us. Who are your close relationships in the church? So many times we come to church and we talk about sports, weather, politics, but we don't know anything else about each other. You see, we need to go beyond the symbol of, hi, I am Craig, what's your name, and we even just know each other, but we need to begin to develop relationship, because it is the context of relationship where people's lives are changed. And as a church, we need to be a church of relationships, not just be busy doing things. God wants us to support and encourage and minister and love each other. And it begins first by getting out of our comfort zone to get to know other people, and also realizing I maybe can't be close friends with everyone, but I can be friendly to all. You see, Christians are like Legos, all right? We're like Legos. The standard Lego has 6 little dots, right? You can only connect so many Legos to one Lego, and then it's full, all right? But after that, and usually for Lego, if you're going to attach another Lego, you got to disconnect someone. Generally, they say we have 6 really close, intimate friendships. So I have a question. Do you have 6 really close, intimate friendships in the church? If you do, you may not be able to make someone else a bosom buddy, but here's the thing. All of us can be friendly and work at connecting them and maybe include someone in our circle with one of our friends who doesn't have 6. Does that make sense? God wants us to be other-oriented, because my flesh naturally focuses on myself. That's my human nature, to focus on me, myself, and I. Those are my 3 best friends. You know that? Me, myself, and I. I take care of me, myself, and I really very well. God wants us as believers, it's a mandate, be hospitable, love the stranger, those you're unacquainted with. That's the first point about biblical hospitality. Let's move on to the second thing that we need to realize about hospitality. Hospitality is, if you're taking notes this morning, a mark of spiritual maturity. It is a mark of spiritual maturity. Paul wrote to Timothy and Titus, and he was telling them about when you're looking for leaders in the church, when you're looking for qualities, what kind of man, what kind of person should you make a bishop? In both times, to Timothy and to Titus, he said, look for someone who is given to hospitality. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 2, it says, a bishop must be hospitable. Titus 1, 7 and 8, for a bishop must be hospitable. Why is hospitality a requirement for church leaders? Because it shows they're not self-absorbed. It shows they just don't connect with their friends, but they engage others. It shows that they are sensitive to the needs of people that are outside. They're sensitive to the people that are kind of on the fringe, and they engage them, they welcome them, and they bring them in. Because here's the thing, that is really the mark of a soul winner. A person that is going to win souls is other-oriented, and they engage others. If you want to be a soul winner, start by being hospitable. You need to be hospitable in Walmart. We need to be hospitable in the restaurant. We need to be hospitable in our neighborhoods. Do you know the names of those who live around you? Do you know your neighbors in the apartment next door? Do you know their names? How can we win someone to Christ if we don't know who they are? We need to begin to get outside of the zone. And it's a mark of spiritual maturity. I know a lot of people think, well, I know the Word of God. I have all this stuff memorized. I have all the doctrine down. But let me ask you, are you a person of hospitality? Do you engage in strangers and in conversation and welcome them? If not, let me just say there's a little bit of maturity that needs to be developed in that area of your life. We many times don't think of it, but Paul said, hey, this is a mark of someone that is a mature believer. They're not self-absorbed. They look for others. Quality number three, the last thing we need to learn about hospitality this morning is that hospitality is the model of Jesus. Hospitality is the model of Jesus. In Luke 7, verse 34, it says, the Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, look, a glutton and a winebibber, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Friends, Jesus welcomed those that were outside the religious community. He welcomed those that really weren't welcome in the synagogue, in the church of the day. His disciples, he recruited Simon the Zealot. A zealot was a political insurrectionist, someone who wanted to overthrow Rome. Jesus included him. He recruited a tax collector. Tax collectors taxed people more than they should, and they stole the money from them. And yet Jesus recruited Matthew to be part of his inner circle. In fact, Jesus went to a party that Matthew threw. Matthew had a party and invited all of his tax collector friends. Jesus showed up and he hung out with them. Jesus connected with an adulterous woman at the well. Jesus was a friend of sinners. Why? Because he welcomed them. He acknowledged the outsider. He just didn't stick with his small little circle of religious people. But he went outside to the fringe and went for every person that he could. There was no one outside the grace of God. You know, it's interesting. You look at Jesus, much of his hospitality took place over food and drink. The woman at the well went to Matthew's house for a party. He said to Zacchaeus, Zacchaeus, come down. I want to go to your house for dinner or for tea, whichever version you're singing as a child in your Sunday school song. I was wondering, Zacchaeus, you come down. I'm going to your house for tea. I was like, I don't think they had tea back in those days. I think that's the English version, okay? But Jesus met over food. And here's the thing. A great way to connect with people you don't know is over food. How many like to eat? Man, every hand, I need to ask that question more often. I think that's the biggest response I've ever gotten when I've asked a question. We all like to eat. Some of us too much, okay? Invite someone to your house, to Dairy Queen, whatever it is. Have a party and invite some people that you don't know and begin to build relationship with them. Food is a great way to begin to break down the walls and just to get to know people. Now, some of you are saying, Craig, this is all fine and dandy, but what happens if I invite someone over to my house and then it's... How are you? What do you say? I mean, have you ever thought that? What do I say to a newcomer? How do I make conversation with someone I don't know? Okay, I want you, everyone get your bulletins out right now, okay? This is one of the most important things, very practical. In your bulletin, there is a friend acrostic. If you want to be a friend, you just have to remember these six areas, and they spell the word friend, all right? It's in your notes. Write it down. The first one is talk about their family. Talk about their family. Ask about their parents. Where do their parents live? Now, are they married? Talk about their kids. How old are their kids? Where do they go to school? What are the activities their kids like to do? Talk about their family. Do they have family that lives near in town? What line of work are their parents in? Are their kids? They have a job. Where do they go? Just talk about their family. Really easy. Letter R stands for relationships. Who are their friends? Who do they hang out with? Maybe if they're single and you're talking to a college person, do they have a boyfriend, a girlfriend? You can talk about relationships. The letter I stands for interests. Their interests. What do they like to do? What do they do when they get home in the afternoon? How do they kick back and relax? What are their hobbies? Are there any sports, scrapbooking, macrame, biking, hiking, whatever it is? What's their favorite kind of music? Favorite kind of TV shows? Favorite kind of movies? Just talk about their interests. What do they like to do? Are they a sports fan? Who's their favorite team? I can tell who some of you's favorite team are just because you wear their paraphernalia all the time. You know, talk about it. Why do you like that team? When did you start liking them? You know, just ask about what their interests are. The letter E stands for employment and education. Employment and education. If you're talking to a student, ask them, you know, what their major is in college. Or someone who's younger, what's their favorite class? What's their favorite subject? Are they in any extracurricular activities? You're speaking to an adult, you can even say, hey, where did you go to school? Where did you graduate? What was your major? Your employment, what line of work are you in? How long have you been in that line of work? How, you know, have you always been in that line of work? What are some of the positives about that? What are some of the positives about going to school where you're at? The positive about your major? Just ask about their employment and their education. The last two areas, these go a little bit deeper, okay? So you may not get to this right away, but eventually you can. And the letter N stands for needs. What are their needs? I ask people sometimes, what's the biggest difficulty you've ever faced in your life? What's one of the greatest hurts you've ever encountered in your life? What are your needs now? How are things going in your life? How's your walk with God? What are some of the decisions you're facing? Some of our high school and college graduates. So what are some of the challenges you're facing as you're looking at your future? Ask people about their needs. Say, is there anything I can pray with you for? The letter D, the final one, is desires. What are their desires? What are their dreams? What would you do for God if you knew you couldn't fail? If you won Publishers Clearinghouse sweepstakes, you don't have to work another day in your life and you could just do whatever you wanted. If you could do anything for God, what would you do? What are their dreams? What are their dreams for their children? What are their career goals? What do they want to do when they finish school? If they want to further their education, where do they want to go? What do they want to get a master's in? What are career goals? What's on their bucket list? How many know what a bucket list is? A bucket list is things you want to do before you kick the bucket. Okay? Well, what are some of the things you want to do in your life before you go to see Jesus? Ask about their dreams and their desires. And if you can just remember, the letter F is? Everybody, family. The letter R is? Relationships. Letter I? Interests. Letter E? Employment and education. The letter N, needs. The letter D, desires. You just remember that. If I want to be a friend, I got to remember those things. And I just ask questions. You can carry on a conversation with someone for quite a long time. Anyone, even the most reserved person, following the friend acrostic can become a person of incredible hospitality, breaking out of their circle and engaging others. Now, it's 10 after 11 this morning. We are going to get out a few minutes early today because I want us to be doers of the word and not hearers only. We are going to sing our final song in just a moment, and those who need prayer, and I know there's needs, and if you have prayer, I want you to come down, okay? Okay. But if you do not have a need, no racers today. Take your tennis shoes off, okay? Don't leave early because Mr. Tim and Mr. Randy and Miss Heather are still up in kids' church and your kids are still preoccupied for another 10, 15 minutes. Hey, man, yeah, I can handle that. This is what we want you to do. I want you to look around right now. I want you to find someone. Find a family, and guys with guys, no girls with girls. If you're single, don't look for this as a time to get a date, okay? But I want you to look around and find someone you don't know this morning. Maybe find 2-3 people because you might not get there. And this is the thing. I want us to take 5-10 minutes and just begin to meet a stranger and get to know them. I want us to break out of our comfort zone, to begin to practice this thing of hospitality, this thing that Peter says, hey, it's the end times, do this. It's a priority. Maybe it's someone that you've never seen them before here in church. This is their first time. Now, if this is your home church, you should be the initiator, okay? Don't make the new person do it. You be the initiator. Maybe it's somebody you've seen their face the past 40 Sundays, and you go, I wonder who that person is. All right? I want you to engage. I don't know what to talk about. Friend, family, relationships, I, interests, E, she's on the cookie team, so. E is education or employment. Yes, only those doing the treat team after service can go out right now. All right, yes. Needs and desires. Maybe say, hey, is there anything I can pray with you for this week? And then think of that person, and if you feel like it, just call them up and then seek them out next Sunday and say, how are things going for you? God wants us to be a church of hospitality, to go beyond the pineapple. Would you bow your heads with me this morning?
You have been listening to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly in Casper, Wyoming. For more information, please email us, casperfaith@gmail.com, or call us at 307-265-9121. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of Casper Faith Assembly, where relationships matter most.